This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
And everyone needs to lock this time into their schedule.
They really do.
We Bad Gays will be here every Tuesday night.
Yep.
On Joy 94.9.
Sorry about it. Or we're not.
We're not
sorry about that.
And we expect everyone to join us in being...
Hashtag baddie.
A baddie.
A baddie.
You got it, Mr. Alex.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to start by just introducing both us and the audience to yourself?
Well, my name is Kate Hood, and with me is Kim Chaos, who's the dramaturg and director and has been really instrumental in the development of That's Why the Lady Needs a Ram. And I'm with Nick and Alex from Joy FM, and we're going to talk about everything, really. And Bryony has just walked into the room.
Yay!
Okay, Kim, what was the process like directing such a show?
Have you got a couple of hours? I think we actually tapped into quite a lot of new territory when we were doing this. So some of it was a bit of a balancing act. So that's probably why Kate brought me in with my circus background. I think that whenever you speak your truth, and particularly when you're in the public arena, you have to balance just being flat out open and going, oh, I'd like to have a career after this. So we've been doing a lot of kind of provocation around how far can we push it, and, you know, is that really honest? So I've been kind of peeling back the layers and poking Kate a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, what we really want to end up with is a show, or this is really the first iteration of the show, which we hope is going to get bigger. But we really want to walk the material for a bunch of people who have probably not been introduced to disability before, and we're embedding audio description into the show. And the beautiful Bryony is on board as my stage buddy, Bryony Webster Wilson. And she and I kind of originated this role, the role of the buddy, through doing contest together last year. And in that show, she was only backstage. In this show, she's on stage. Yeah. Nobody has ever done this before, to my knowledge.
Or no, I haven't come across it.
It's not something that I'm aware of anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's a big experiment.
Yeah. Where are you really hoping to come experiment? Out of this? Such a loaded question.
It really is. Yeah, like these open questions where you just go, oh, yes. Yeah.
It's such a big question because... For me, with a background as a jobbing actor in the mainstream theatre industry, there's a set of rules that everybody adheres to, and those rules kind of have to relax a little bit. If the mainstream is going to work with disabled artists. And so that's what this is about. It's about dipping our toe in the water and seeing what comes out.
What kind of rules are they?
Okay, there are... In the rehearsal room, everybody has to be on time. We have a schedule. We have a break set at a particular time. Then we have lunch. Then we have another break. Then the day ends. It's quite a long day. Usually we work 10 till 6 in the theatre. At Raspberry Ripple, we work 10 till 3 or 4. And sometimes we start a bit late, and other times we have to work around people's access needs. So, for example, Kim has an invisible disability. She had to go off and have a couple of medical appointments. Mm-hmm. I've had to do the same thing. Bryony's had to do the same thing. So we always make those allowances. And those allowances are never made in the mainstream industry. So that's just a really, you know...
So it's a very rigid sort of work structure.
Yes.
And it's the kind of rigidity that doesn't accommodate for people who have particular needs, such as people with disabilities.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about Raspberry Ripple. I love the name.
Raspberry Ripple. It's Cockney rhyming slang for cripple. So that's how I came across the name.
Okay.
So it works in England, but not so much in Australia, unless I explain it that way.
But we're happy to educate.
We are really happy to educate. So I formed Raspberry Ripple because I could see a big fat hole in the mainstream performing arts. And I knew that there were some astonishingly good artists with disability who just weren't getting a go in that particular sphere. And I noticed also that there are some astonishingly good disabled artists who work completely separate outside of the mainstream. And I want to put an end to that. I want us all to mingle together because, after all, disability is just part of the human condition. So disability, along with all other diversities, need to be up there, front and centre, on stage.
For sure. You said that we operate around a social model of disability, which says that barriers put us in place by a world designed for normal people. Can you expand on this phrase?
Yeah. Look, we have the charity model of disability, which is the model mostly adopted by people in Australia, I have to say. But and that model says that we've got to feel sorry and accommodate people with disabilities.
Yes.
We've got to be nice to them. We've got to be charitable and kind to them. The social model says that the only reason people with disabilities are not seen out and about in society is because of access issues, barriers that are put in place by a society which is made only for able-bodied people. So Raspberry Ripple is all about that. Raspberry Ripple is all about connecting the dots, joining people up together. So we want to work with able-bodied artists as well as disabled artists.
Okay. Cool.
We don't want to be seen as less than.
Yeah, or limiting, I guess, who you work with. Yeah.
Exactly.
And also within that charitable model, participation in the arts, like participation in sport, is seen as a therapeutic activity. So we want to transform that so that we can recognize there are professional performers who were either born with a disability or acquired one, who can operate in the professional arena. It's not happy therapy to make us feel better about ourselves. It's actually communication with all the artistic rigor that that implies. So,
yeah.
I imagine there's probably a lot of opportunities as well for justice in this space as well, because I have seen, because I used to go to the theatre a lot, there were parts where the character was disabled, but the actor was abled.
Mm.
So it's like there do seem to be parts out there for disabled actors to play, but they're not getting them.
Well, here's the thing. Most plays are not written with disability in mind at all. And yet, disabled people are mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, murderers, psychiatrists, writers, musicians. You know, we can play all of those roles. So in my ideal world, we would see people with disability auditioning alongside able-bodied people for those roles. Because why not?
Yeah. Were there any specific challenges you found with like the directing process specifically for this show, or that you would like to talk about, or anything that comes to mind?
Well, I don't want to kind of have any spoilers. I think one of the interesting things in the process was dealing with necessary issues around physicality, but then also talking about the general public's perception of a person in a wheelchair. And we've kind of woven that in as a physical piece accompanied by text. So I'm not gonna spoil it, but it's a very different approach. Also looking at how do you structure a script so that there are breaks that make sense. They're not perceptible breaks. They work with the arc of the story, so that, you know, a solo performer, or sort of solo,
a solo plus performer,
one woman plus show, which is another concept, can work to her best ability. And part of our conversation has been, you know, what do performers need to be able to create their best work? What conditions need to exist for the clearest expression? Yeah.
And how did you come up with the name? I love it.
Oh, look, the name, I've got to attribute my friend Babs McMillan, who I was having a drink with one day, and she sat there with a glass of white wine in her hand, and I made some comment about lack of access, and she said, "Darling, that's why the lady needs a ramp." And I said, "Can I use that?" And she said, "Yes."
Oh my God.
And so I'm using it.
And someone's apparently a coffee addict in the show, which I think can relate to that on a personal level. Definitely could have auditioned for that part, but that's okay. And it's one night only on this coming Saturday.
17th, so the one after this.
Yeah, that's right. Amazing. Thank you guys so much.
Pleasure.
Was there anything else you wanted to know?
Well, I usually end all of my interviews with, is there anything that you would like to add that we maybe didn't talk about?
I've got something.
Go.
Yeah, just in terms of access and advocacy, I think that it's great that theatres are becoming more accessible, but that tends to be for audiences, and I think there needs to be a much deeper investigation of backstage areas and access for the performers themselves, because a theatre will be considered accessible based entirely on the audience access.
Yeah, and it's quite chaotic backstage too. So.
Yeah, and in terms of creating a production or sticking to tight time schedules, if it takes an hour to get to the disabled loo, kind of ruins your break, doesn't it? If you can get to it. Or
that's
if you
right.
can get to the rehearsal room, or
yeah. And that comment leads so nicely into the role of the buddy. So as Kate said, the role of the buddy was invented by her during a rehearsal process for a professional production, where Kate's needs, it became obvious that she was not able to the same as the other casted professional actors. So just as access to toilets was needed to look out behind stage for the professional performers, so too was assistance to do her job as a performer. So the role of buddy also feeds into access needs. This is very much, I see the role, I feel very proud to be introducing the role to the industry by Kate's side. I'm really proud. And
thanks, Brian.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
It's all good.
So one of the things that Kate and I realised is that this role of buddy is best with a theatre background, because this person understands the process of theatre, the rehearsals, the schedule, like Kate was saying, learning lines, blocking. If you have a think about an able-bodied actor being directed and in the blocking, and then you turn your mind to think about a person with disability being blocked by the director, how would you do that? There is actually no template yet within our society or theatre industry, performance industry.
Plus, so you give great access to coffee.
Yes.
Vital.
Yeah, fantastic, which is, it's extremely important, as you know.
So having this role on stage for That's Why the Lady Needs a Ramp is another huge about-face and introduction and awesome thing. I see, because industry professionals will be sitting in the audience seeing this role of buddy be there by the stage, not as stage crew, not as a director, not as a lighting technician or a sound technician, but purely there. Kate said this throwaway passing comment during rehearsal of guide dog as a sort of description for this role one day. I thought, yeah, that's exactly how I see myself at the moment.
Well, hopefully a bit more than that.
Right there by her side, being told what she needs by her, because she's the performer, she's the one with the issues, with the ability and disability.
Yeah.
So, and then there is a little bit of ingenuity from this role as well required of, oh, Kate will need her script, mark down the blocking. Yeah.
Although I kind of have a little fantasy that if the role of buddy is well integrated, mm-hmm. that it'll become sort of like Japanese bunraku puppetry, where you have the person who's on the stage, but the audience consciously chooses to not see them, even though they're clearly there manipulating things. And so you get that shift in consciousness where the assistance is visible but becomes invisible right. through being accustomed to it.
Like a non-diegetic performer.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there was actually something I think I said earlier in the interview that I started thinking about. I realized after I said that able-bodied actors are often playing actors with disabilities, that I think I may have implied that disabled actors might only be able to play disabled parts, but then I started indexing my brain and realized that there are actually a lot of even famous characters that you could get a disabled person to play. You know, just from plays that we all know, love, even like Shakespeare ones, who just say, well, this character could have a disability, it doesn't really affect the story of the play otherwise.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Further to what you did ask before, or mention before, about able-bodied performing artists being cast in disabled roles, only just is it being introduced, and I only know this through working with Kate Hood, that actors with disability are being cast in roles of characters with disability. For example, the Elephant Man at the Malt House saw a disabled actor take that disabled role.
Although what was fascinating about that is that that actor had a range of disabilities, and people didn't understand that as an actor, he was increasingly transforming his physicality as an actor to portray the degeneration of the Elephant Man. So he may have started off with disabilities where you go, okay, he's a bit like that. But the actor is working really hard to do things that were not typical for him. And I think if we see an able-bodied actor portraying somebody with a disability, it's seen as them showing greater range, or it's you know, an accolade in a way. But we have to actually transpose that onto the performer with disability and maybe recognize that they're working outside their own physicality professionally too. You know.
It's also safe. It's very safe for an audience to see a non-disabled person playing a disabled person, because we know that that's just artifice, and we can appreciate the performance, we can appreciate the transformation that we're seeing in front of our very eyes, and then just go home and forget about it.
Right.
Yeah. But I often think, well, you would not... We've got to the point in Australia where we don't find blackface acceptable, but we do find able face acceptable. Question mark, why?
Yes.
The able gaze, perhaps.
Maybe, yeah. But I mean, people don't really kind of think deeply about this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that we all began to, because we have some really great artists in this country who we're at the moment exporting. They're going overseas.
Right.
Mark Brew was a dancer with the Australian Ballet, and he now runs Axis Dance Company in San Francisco.
Hmm.
He was headhunted for that.
Yeah.
And before that, he lived in the UK and ran his own theatre company there. So Adam Hills doing the last leg in London. Why is he not doing that here?
It's also quite tricky because when you have an able-bodied actor performing disability, you run the risk of creating what could be seen as kind of physical cliches or shorthands that limit how one portrays disability. And it's only if you have a very lived experience of disability that you have the tools to create around that reality in the world of the able-bodied. And just as any kind of tokenism, you do get that shorthand. Going, oh yeah, that's the disabled performer, and that's the person, you know, the immigrant performer, and you just kind of go through the list, and the tools available become compressed into the cliche rather than expanded into a more accurate view of diversity.
An authentic view of diversity.
Yes.
And that only comes about when we all breathe the same air together. So when we have First Nations people in the rehearsal room, something is going to happen. Something unique is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And when we have people with disability, artists with disability in the room, something unique is going to happen. It can't not. So the question for me is about all of these plays that are in the Australian canon. And Raspberry Ripple does this initiative called Raspberry Ripple Reads. And last year we read a play called Love Child by Joanna Murray-Smith. And in that play, an adopted daughter comes to find her biological mother. In our version of the play, the biological mother was played by me, a wheelchair user. So without altering the text at all, we just put that out there. And it created a difference for people immediately.
Mm. Yeah, I do have one more question. Is there some different principles that would apply between physical disabilities and mental disabilities in terms of this space?
All of it really comes down to that question that Kim articulated before about what do you need to do your best work, and what do we need to work? What do we need to do to provide you with access to do your best work? It's about being open and listening to the answers and acting on them.
So you know the, I don't know who did the production, but the curious incident of the dead dog in the night. You remember
the dog in the night time?
Yeah. So that was just staged last year, I think.
MTC brought that over from the UK.
So the lead character in that has autism, and yet the choice was made not to employ an actor with autism because they being, I presume, MTC or whoever was putting it on, hadn't yet figured out exactly the answer to your question, how to nurture a performer with a mental disability or difference into a safe way of performing in such a large space, such lights, such cues for their disability to be affected. So it's a really curious question.
So, I mean, that's actually a really interesting thing for me because there is Autistic Theatre Company in Melbourne, which is a company of autistic artists. And, you know, so they write and perform their own work. So, of course, you know, a major problem here is that our educational institutions, our drama schools, our universities, our performance education places don't take quotas of deaf and disabled people. So there is no pathway.
Right.
No pathway at all into the mainstream performing arts.
And imagine if then all the drama schools started integrating that as part of their lesson plan and then also had a stream for training buddies so that these people with disabilities had absolute support and the access, everything that they needed. You know, there is a lot missing from our industry, right from the ground level, from the schools. right up to the theatres.
And the approaches are broad. So, I mean, as you say, if you've got somebody with, you know, an intellectual or a psychiatric disability, whether it's chemically generated or physical, visible disabilities, invisible disabilities, there's such a range of techniques that are out there to offset that. But if people don't know that, or they work exclusively in one area and there's no bridging. So it's about building the networks and sharing the skills, and also accepting that there are fantastic performers, professional performers, who would like to develop further and have the ability to partake much more than they're allowed to. You know, it's just, it'd be great. It'd be great. It would build tools for the support people, build tools for directors, because, you know, as a director coming into, and a dramaturg coming into this process, everybody wants to be accepting of, well, I won't say everybody, but most people would like to be accepting of difference, but we kind of get stuck at this thing of going, I don't know what to do. So it's also creating a space where people can go, I'm here, I'm willing, and I accept that I don't know what to do. So how? Let's have this conversation. Let's move this forward. And I think that virtuosity does make space for being a beginner and starting new.
I think we've just identified the fundamental issue.
Yeah. And actually, for me, I've just got to I really feel that it's an incredibly creative thing. Like, the possibilities are enormous here for the entire industry to go, oh my goodness, there's a new audience out there for us. Oh my goodness. There's new work that we can do. If we just relax our boundaries a bit or make some new ones, there's actually stuff that we can really experiment with. And we can do this in the most creative of ways. Why wouldn't we want to put this on stage? That is the question.
Is it a question?
Rhetorical.
Who have experience of disability in their own lives, to see actors with disability performing. For me, theatre is very much about understanding the human condition, having a compassion for it. And what a gift, what a thing that should just be in the world for theatre to really be portraying the trueness of the life that we live.
Although I think it's so funny putting all of us in the room, because we could go on for hours. Because I think inevitably what happens when a performer is dealing with disability and trying to create a space within the world of the performing arts, you inevitably become an advocate. Because you go, oh, there's so much that actually has to be transformed for me to be able to do what I want to do in this space. And so any performer who's working out there just has to kind of keep swapping these hats around and not go too far down the advocacy path or too far down the promotion path of possibility and bright eye and, you know, work on being a performer. So we're always out there, but it is time to change. It is time to open up spaces and see what happens. And I think it's an exciting time, and I try to use any frustration we encounter as a kind of tool to move forward into the next phase. Go, how can we transform that? Let's keep moving forward.
It's the time to celebrate as well. A really good time to celebrate.
One and only Footscray Community Arts Centre. The lady needs a ramp. Everyone needs to go.
That's why the lady needs a ramp.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.